Oh my gosh, it's December 3rd already. It's time to shop for Valentine's Day.
And now, here's Bill Bittica.
It's Christmas time, and its magic is here. It's Christmas time, and its wonders appear. The scent of pine fills the Christmassy air, while the church bell chimes, and there's joy everywhere. Some precious gift lights a little one's eye. God's blessed lift stays the weary in wild. This Christmas time, keep its magic right here within your heart. Every day of the year. This Christmas time, keep its magic right here within your heart every day of the year.
Smell coffee beans roasting?
You probably will when you start buying your bags of coffee at Slow Roasted Coffee's warehouse in Los Osos. Slow Roasted Coffee is expanding their own in-house store, which will feature, you guessed it, coffee and accessories. They're open weekdays from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m., and there's always a few free coffees for you to sample. Catch this. You'll save money with the new Slow Roasted Coffee Coin Club. Here's how it works. After each coffee purchase, they'll stamp your coin, and your 10th pound will be free. Of course, your local grocery stores still carry Slow Roasted Coffee, but now you can shop directly at their warehouse. That's right. Walk in the door, and you might smell the beans a-roasting. You'll find Slow Roasted Coffee in Los Osos at 1172 Los Olivos Avenue near Fairchild. Now in their third decade, Slow Roasted Coffee is truly a Central Coast tradition. Mmm, that tastes great.
Hello.
Most Smokehouse Barbecues would knock them out of the park over and over with their award-winning baby back ribs to their pulled pork, chicken, and shredded beef, tri-tip, and Louisiana hot link sandwiches. How about a salad, six kinds, maybe one of four burgers or a chicken job, either sandwich or a half a bird. Most has enormous selection of sides from beans, tater salad, fries, O-rings, and the list goes on and on. Kids menu, soda pop, brewskis by the pitcher, Moe's in Slowtown and at the beach in Pismo. You'll be saying, Moe Barbecue, please.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
That's right, you'll be saying, Moe Barbecue, please. It's right now, 12:11. You're Bill Bittica. Talk is cheap. Friends and Neighbors Network on 1340 KYNS. You're a news station. Here we are. All right, pens are falling. Things are happening. Let's do our birthdays and our watches. Now, I get the printed edition of the Tribune because as of, we'll hear about it on the Calcos News, as of Wednesday, the newspaper is going to cost you if you want to do it online. So I'm just going to continue to do it this way. I highlight in history on December 3rd, 1992, the first phone text message was sent by British engineer Neil Papworth, who transmitted the greeting Merry Christmas from his work computer in Berkshire to Vodafone executive Richard Jarvis' mobile phone. Wow. In 1818, Illinois was admitted as the 21st state. In 1828, Andrew Jackson was elected president of the United States by the Electoral College. In 1833, Oberlin College in Ohio, the first coeducational school of higher learning in the United States, began holding classes. 1979, 11 people were killed in a crush of fans at Cincinnati's Riverfront Coliseum, where the British rock group The Who was performing. Pearl Bailey had this to say, what the world really needs is more love and less paperwork. Right there. Singer's birthday today. Singer J.P. Morgan is 81. Rock singer Ozzy Osbourne is 64. Actress Heather Menzies is 63. Rock singer Mickey Thomas is 63. Actress Daryl Hannah is 52 today. Actress Julianne Moore is 52. Figure skater Katrina Witt is 47. Is 47. Actor Brendan Fraser is 44. Singer Montel Jordan is 44. Actress Anna Chomsky, 32, and actress Amanda Seyfried is 27. Happy birthday to them and to you, if it is yours.
Happy birthday to you.
It's your call, and the smartest one you can make is to Coastal Computers. There isn't another group of 10 people more dedicated to helping their clients get the most out of their business computers. Dedicated pros who enjoy helping people with their computers. They love making small business networks network and making the whole mess seem simple. Coastal Computers is here for the small business that needs computers and technology just to stay even and be competitive. They're here for the small business that can't afford to hire a computer staff. It doesn't matter whether price is your first concern or your last. Service is Coastal Computers' first concern, and that includes making your operation painless and highly successful. Coastal Computers is known for making the tough stuff easy. They've been doing it for over 25 years with lots of happy clients. They're certainly the real deal and worth a call. Coastal Computers, Microsoft, Intel, and networking specialists. Call 543-9047 or visit ccslo.com right now.
News you can use from Calcos News on this Monday, December 3rd. Here's what's going on, and it's not good. A tanker boat suspected to be used for smuggling drugs rammed into a Coast Guard boat early yesterday morning, killing an officer off the Coast Guard off the coast of Santa Barbara County. Coast Guard spotted the tanker boat around 1 a.m. near Santa Cruz Island in the Santa Barbara Channel and dispatched the cutter Halibut to investigate it. A small boat was then launched from the cutter and approached the Panga, Coast Guard spokesman Adam Eggers told NewsHawk. When the Coast Guard small boat approached with its blue law enforcement light energized, the suspect vessel identified a profile Mexican-style Panga maneuvered at a high rate of speed directly toward the Coast Guard small boat and struck it before fleeing the scene. The collision threw two members into the water, caused a traumatic head injury to one. The Coast Guard boat recovered both of the crew members, but at about 2:20 a.m., doctors declared Chief Petty Officer Terrell Horn, 34, dead. The other crewman sustained minor injuries. Other guardsmen stopped the fleeing Panga and detained two suspects. ABC News reported that the Coast Guard detained two additional suspects from a pleasure craft it intercepted along with a Panga. Santa Barbara Sheriff's SWAT team and the U.S. Border Patrol are searching for yet another two suspects whom they believe are the suspected smugglers dropped off on Santa Cruz Island. Incidents remain under investigation. Law enforcement has not released the names of the suspects. The cause of Horn's death is expected to be released on Monday, but it's obviously blunt force trauma. Several Panga boats suspected of smuggling drugs from Mexico have reached the shores of San Luis Obispo County in recent months. One Panga boat beached near San Simeon just last week, leading to multiple arrests. Other news. California's democratically controlled legislature welcomes its new members today, and soon lawmakers have already sprung in. Some lawmakers have already sprung into action. Senator Tom Miano and Luis Alejo, along with Senator Kevin DeLeon, all Democrats, are reintroducing the Trust Act, aiming to stop deportation of undocumented immigrants arrested for nonviolent minor offenses. Governor Jerry Brown vetoed a similar measure in September, but the bill's sponsors said they now have corrected the problems and also the votes to override a gubernatorial veto. Ammiano said in a statement that he was wanted to reintroduce this immediately because these policies have been hurting people every day. In his veto message, Brown said, until we have immigration reform, federal agents shouldn't try to coerce local law enforcement officers into detaining people who have been picked up for minor offenses and pose no reasonable threat to their community. But he said the original bill was flawed because it didn't define serious or violent adequately. Brown now says he will consider a new bill with those issues now properly addressed. And? I was telling you about here, the San Francisco Tribune is going to start charging on Wednesday for online stuff. Southern California Water Agency approved a contract Thursday to buy the entire output of what would be the Western Hemisphere's largest seawater desal plant, clearing the way for construction to begin early next year. San Diego County Water Authority Board voted in favor of the $984 million project. The Carlsbad plant is designed to produce 50 million gallons of highly purified drinking water a day, enough to supply about 8% of the region's water demands in 2020. Backers of the project say the relatively high cost of an acre foot of desal water is well worth the protection it provides against drought. The region imports about 80% of its water from Northern California and the Colorado River on hundreds of miles of aqueducts. Agency will pay $2,402 to $2,290 for an acre foot of water, more than twice what it costs to import water. It's a decision that is being closely watched, especially in California, where the plant is at the furthest along among other about two dozen other proposals in various stages of planning. Desal has been slow to catch on in the United States, even though it has helped quench demand in Australia, Saudi Arabia, and other countries lacking fresh water. On the Central Coast, several desal plant proposals have hit snags. Current plans for a plant to serve the Cambria area were waylaid last December by the California Coastal Commission. Panel ruled Santa Rosa Creek is off limits for intake and outfall facilities. Specifically, the commission agreed unanimously that U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' planned testing of soil and water at the creek mouth would be inconsistent with state coastal regulations. Officials of the commission said the Corps could defer to the decision or proceed as planned and risk a lawsuit. In 2012, Cliff Branch, one of the owners of a 17-acre property atop the Napomo Mesa, offered to sell the property to the Napomo Services District. He suggested it could be used as a future water source or for as the site for water treatment facility. The parcel was considered for a variety of purposes in early 2008 by a previous district board, and implementation of a desal plant was a favored concept, according to Branch. Michael LeBrun, general manager of the service district, said the offer was unsolicited. He said in July the board was doing its due diligence and planned to consider a number of options that it has. I don't know what they are, the number of options. But okay. And then, I don't think we got... Oh, this sounds like the news we got from the football world today. Aurora Beach police are searching for a man who allegedly shot his estranged wife on Saturday around 9 p.m. William Roger Forgie of Roseville shot his wife at a home on the 800 block of Mentone Avenue and then fled the scene. While running eastbound on Mentone Avenue, he shot at a neighbor who was not injured. Emergency personnel transported Forgery's wife to Sierra Vista Regional Medical Center, where she is being treated for serious injuries. Police believe Forgery is driving a silver 2004 Toyota 4Runner with a California license plate of 5DVW739. So if you look out your window right now and you see that, you might want to alert the police. He has ties to the Sacramento area. And that's what's happening right now on CalcoastNews.com and on KYNS 1340. And right now it is exactly 12:20 and 30 seconds.
CalcoastNews.com on KYNS, your news station.
Here we are doing the news, doing what's going on. Hi, happy December. We're going to do a Calhoun's Cannons today, and boy, is she Bob humbugging. Oh, wow, she's not in good mood at all about that. Okay. No, I haven't really done any Christmas. I've done a little Christmas shopping. I shouldn't say that. I've done some. Not much. Not much. Today. Sunshine, as you can see out some windows, is looking sunny, and we're supposed to be done with the rain for a week or so. And so that's pleasant news, I think. That's what I think. All right. Here we had scams increasing over the holidays. This are just a few they're talking about. Most likely you did not win a free Apple iPad 3. You didn't, unless you were in a contest for one. Bogus emails are claimed to be from Google's Gmail provider. The Better Business Bureau warns that you don't want to click to claim a prize. If you're traveling during the holidays, the BBB says to be wary of unexpected cancellation notices via email or text. Some scam artists use them to trick you into clicking unsafe links. Do not broadcast your travel plans online. Quickly use Facebook to find empty homes. Know who you are dealing with when shopping online. Try the phone number before you order to see whether you actually get a service representative. Bankers suggest using one dedicated credit card for online purchases to monitor statements and spot discrepancies. Don't save time by shopping or banking online if you're working out of an unsecured Wi-Fi network in an airport or hotel. Really, whatever, don't do it. Don't get on an unsecured Wi-Fi line. No, it's a bad idea. Be ready for the regular seasonal flurry of hacking holiday e-cards, according to the Better Business Bureau. Do not click on links or attachments in e-cards and other holiday greetings from unfamiliar senders. Get those spam filters ready. Now, there are people that send like, little cards, and they're cute, you know. What is it, Jackie Lawson? Is that the site that has a lot of nice little cards? Anyway, so if you know where it's from, it's okay. But, there's just all kinds of scammy stuff going on. Yeah, that works. It's scammy stuff. Now, I'm going to do something after we take a break at 12:30. I've never done this before, and you might say, Bill, this is a little excessive, don't you think? No. Yes, I'm not sure. But they had a segment on 60 Minutes, which I didn't see, by the way. I didn't see it, but I saw it today when I was scanning the news sources. And it is so remarkable. It is so absolutely remarkable that I think it's worth playing. It's going to take 10, 12 minutes. But I think it's just one of the most unbelievable stories you've ever heard. And it's true. It's a true unbelievable story. That's what makes it really crazy. That's what makes it crazy. Northern California sure got walloped. Not as bad as they thought, though. Not as bad as they thought. Then there was a story about, I don't know where which one it was in, but anyway, there was a story about three people that fell off the Cayucas Pier late at night. They were horsing around, and they went into the drink. And the person who was like a police spokesman or whatever he was, sheriff's spokesman, I don't know who it was, because that would be Tony Coppola, I don't know who it was. But anyway, somebody in authority said, yeah, people fall off the pier all the time. They do? Have you heard about people falling off the piers all the time? I hadn't heard that. I've never heard that. I've been around for a long time here. I lived in Cayucas itself. I don't remember anybody falling off the pier. So, anyway, they said what was as bad about it was a dark and stormy night. And so that added some, you know, pathos to it all. All right, AG police still searching for site for police HQ. There's here's the deal. The city wants this West Branch site, but there was supposed to be a recreational-type place go in there, and they're not sure if they're going to finalize those plans and go in there or not. So they're kind of, you know, chafing at the bit there, saying, okay, you're going to go in there or not because we really would like that spot. They have guns. Why don't they just take it? I don't know. Anyhow, I guess they're waiting to see what happens right there. All right. Okay. Other folks that are in the news. Letterman, Led Zeppelin, and many others honored in D.C. at the Kennedy Center honorees. Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, John Paul Jones, Natalie Markova, David Letterman, Dustin Hoffman, and Buddy Guy were all honored at the White House ceremony. So that's very nice. That's really nice. Now we have this other story about the football player that shot his wife and then himself. And what's bothered me a whole lot about it is there's all this speculation right now about, you know, does it have to do with being a macho football player and all this? I don't know why all of a sudden we jumped to that. I don't get it at all. We don't know why he did. And being a professional football player may have absolutely nothing in the whole wide world to do with it. So this speculation that, well, you know, that's probably what it was. You know, you got to be a macho kind of guy and you can't show your feelings and, you know, if you want to kill yourself, you can't tell anybody. I think we're just barking at stars. Speaking of stars, Twilight still number one at the box office over the weekend, $17.4 million. Breaking Dawn. Skyfall was number 2 at 17 million. Lincoln number 3 at 13 million. Rise of the Guardians number 4 at 13 million. This Life of Pi, that's supposed to be this remarkably wonderful movie, is not doing remarkably well so far at the box office with 12 million in sales. Wreck-It Ralph did 7 million. Killing Them Softly, 7 million. Red Dawn, 6 million. Flight, 4.5 million. And The Collection, 3.4 million. So that's what happened right there. Here's another one of these stories. We just had a story last week about somebody that bought a thing. Oh, no, that's not wasn't last week. I saw it on TV. I saw it on TV. It was a picture of John Kennedy that somebody had drawn. And what made it kind of interesting was it was actually a prisoner. I think I told you this story. It was actually a prisoner in a prison that actually drew this picture of John Kennedy. Well, it was found underneath another picture. And so the guy said, well, I don't really care what to put a value on, just to depend what somebody that's a Kennedy fan would want to pay for it. But here this lady bought a $12 thing called Red Nose that was supposed to be about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for $12.34 in Milwaukee at a Goodwill store, and it was by American artist Alexander Calder worth $9,000. Last month, the Salvador Dali sketch found at a Goodwill shop in Tacoma, Washington, sold for $21,000. In the summer, a North Carolina woman pocketed $27,000 for paintings she bought at Goodwill. And in the spring, a dusty jug donated in Buffalo, New York, was discovered to be thousands of years old, American Indian artifact. It was returned to its tribe instead of being offered for sale, which was very nice of the person to do that. I know we all say, yeah, I'm going to start checking the pictures I have in my house, too. There must be something under there. There has to be something hiding under there. Please, please. Now, this is interesting to me. It's okay. I mean, I don't care one way or the other to tell you the truth, but it leads to a lot of thought. The county has okayed fast food for the Carrizo Plain. They're not specifying what fast food it would be, but it would be a restaurant and a motel remodel. Anyway, so it would have some kind of fast food. But here's the interesting thing. So while the solar plant is being built, then you have customers for such a place. As soon as it stops being built, you no longer have customers for such a place. Isn't that not true? So it's curious to me. You would think that, maybe not. Well, maybe yes. I don't know. People that run roach coaches, you know, they run these, what do they call them? Restaurant buses, what do they call them? Lunch coaches, lunch wagons, those things. They would know more about it. But if you pull into a place that has a lot of workers all at one time in one place, and you pulled in there at lunchtime, let's say, would that be worth your while? Not that they shouldn't go get fast food for dinner too. They can. So I think they picture a lot of men that can't cook being involved with this thing, which I think is an accurate assumption, to tell you the truth. I don't know. Here's the other thing going on. Starbucks is selling a $7 cup of coffee. Now, it's some kind of Costa Rican coffee that I had never heard of myself, but okay. And they say there's fewer beans, and so there's only so many beans, and so therefore that's why it's so expensive. Now, when they sold Costa Rican Tarazu, they sold it out online in a matter of minutes when I had that for sale. Now, slow roasted coffee, for instance, that's the kind of coffee they use from Costa Rica. That's an excellent coffee. But, be careful here about what you hear and what you know. We used to be asked all the time if we sold Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee. And I said, no, that's just a company. And I said, yeah, it's the best coffee in the world. Actually, it isn't. It isn't even approached the best coffee in the world. It was a trade name. The name Jamaican Blue Coffee came as a name that was made up by an ad agency. And so they called it Jamaican Blue Mountain Coffee, and they put this aura of amazement on it, like, wow, you can't believe what this coffee's like. And it's all bogus. How many mountains do you see in Jamaica? So I thought. So anyway, very interesting. Starbucks, $7 cup of coffee. I'm telling you, get a slow roll cup of Joe. You'll be happy.
Ever smell coffee beans roasting?
Yeah.
You probably will when you start buying your bags of coffee at Slow Roasted Coffee's warehouse in Los Osos.
Costa Rica.
Slow Roasted Coffee is expanding their own in-house store, which will feature, you guessed it, coffee and accessories.
They're open weekdays from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. And there's always a few free coffees for you to sample. Catch this. You'll save money with the new Slow Roasted Coffee Coin Club. Here's how it works. After each coffee purchase, they'll stamp your coin, and your 10th pound will be free. Of course, your local grocery stores still carry Slow Roasted Coffee, but now you can shop directly at their warehouse. That's right. Walk in the door, and you might smell the beans a-roasting. You'll find Slow Roasted Coffee in Los Osos at 1172 Los Olivos Avenue near Fairchild. Now in their third decade, Slow Roasted Coffee is truly a Central Coast tradition. Mmm, that tastes great.
Time now for your community calendar. Ring in the holidays by finding something wonderful for everyone on your list. A one-night-only event of fun, community celebration, and great shopping deals offered by local merchants. It's the 5th Annual Cayucas Christmas Open House on Saturday, December 8th from 5 to 8 p.m. And if you want more information, call 995-1200. Come on out and celebrate the holidays with CASA at the Madonna Inn. Voices for Children. Wednesday, December 5th from 11:30 to 1:30. For more information, call 541-6542. The Slow Women's Network Luncheon will be happening on Wednesday, December 19th from 11:30 to 1:30 at the Monday Club. If you want more information, email info@slowwomensnetwork.org. If you have something happening in your zip code, we want to hear about it. Calendar at RadioCentralCoast.com.
Country Oaks Care Center, caring for the loved ones that you care about. Country Oaks, owned and operated by John and Sharon Henning. They're friends of mine, really nice friends, and that niceness shows at their 57-bed skilled nursing facility at 830 East Chapel in Santa Maria. Country Oaks specializes in short-term rehabilitation and long-term care. Country Oaks accepts Medicare, Medi-Cal, HMOs, and private insurance, and will do the paperwork for you. They offer physical, occupational, speech, enteral, and IV therapies, including a fully equipped therapy room. At Country Oaks Care Center, your loved ones will find a warm and caring staff and a home-like atmosphere. All activities are geared to individual needs and desires, as well as nutritious meals and that extra ounce of caring and a cup of slow-roasted coffee. From Rotary to their annual float participation in the Santa Maria Elks Rodeo Parade, the Hennings are involved in their community. At 830 East Chapel in Santa Maria, Country Oaks Care Center, caring for the loved ones that you care about.
Frost grows outside the window. First kiss under the mistletoe. Oh, 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 oh. Bells shine.
Down, down. it's when it's Christmas time again.
Tonight we're going to tell you about a place so brutal and horrific it's hard to believe it actually exists. It is, by all accounts, a modern-day concentration camp, a secret prison hidden in the mountains 50 miles from North Korea's capital, Pyongyang. It's called Camp 14, and according to human rights groups, it's part of the largest network of political prisons in the world today. Some 150,000 people are believed to be doing hard labor on the brink of starvation in these hidden gulags. But it's not just those who have been accused of political crimes. It's their entire families, grandparents, parents, and children, a practice called three generations of punishment. Very little was known about Camp 14 until a young man showed up in South Korea with an extraordinary tale to tell. His name is Shin Dong-yuk. And he said he'd not only escaped from Camp 14, but he was born there. He's believed to be the only person born and raised in the camps who's ever escaped and lived to tell about it.
The story will continue in a moment.
Did anybody ever explain to you why you were in a camp?
No, never. Because I was born there, I just thought those people who carry guns were born to carry guns, and prisoners like me were born as prisoners.
Did you know America existed?
Not at all.
Did you know that the world was round?
I had no idea if it was round or square.
Camp 14 was all that Shin Dong-hyuk says he knew for the first 23 years of his life. These satellite images are the only glimpse outsiders have ever gotten of the place. 15,000 people are believed to be imprisoned here, forced to live and work in this bleak collection of houses, factories, fields, and mines surrounded by an electrified fence. Growing up, did you ever think about escaping?
That never crossed my mind.
It never crossed your mind?
No, never. What I thought was that the society outside the camp would be similar to that inside the camp.
You thought everybody lived in a prison camp like this?
Yes.
Shin told us that this is the house where he was born. His mother and father were prisoners whose marriage, if you could call it that, was arranged by the guards as a reward for hard work. Did they live together? Did they see each other every day?
No, you can't live together. My mother and my father were separated, and only when they worked hard could they be together.
Did they love each other?
I don't know. In my eyes, we were not a family. We were just prisoners.
How do you mean?
You wear what you're given, you eat what you're given, and you only do what you're told to do. So there's nothing that the parents can do for you, and there's nothing that the children can do for their parents.
This may be a very dumb question, but did you even know what love was when you were, for the first 23 years of your life?
I still don't know what that means.
Love may have been absent, but fear was not. In this building, a school of sorts, Shin says he watched his teacher beat a little girl to death for hoarding a few kernels of corn, a violation of prison rules which he and the other students were required to learn by heart.
If you escape, you would be shot. If you try to escape or plan to escape, you would be shot. Even if you did not report someone who was trying to escape, you would be shot.
The shootings took place in this field, he says. The other prisoners were required to watch. As frightening as the executions were, Shin considered them a break from the monotony of hard labor and constant hunger. The prisoners were fed the same thin gruel of cornmeal and cabbage day in and day out. They were so hungry, Shin says, they ate rats and insects to survive.
So for 23 years, you were always hungry?
Yes, of course. We were always hungry. And the guards always told us, through hunger, you will repent.
What Shin and his family were repenting for probably dates back to the Korean War, when two of his uncles reportedly defected to the South. Shin believes that's why his father and grandfather were sent to Camp 14 and why he was supposed to live there until he died. North Korea's first dictator, Kim Il-sung, instituted this practice of three generations of punishment back in the 1950s.
The idea is to eliminate this lineage, to eliminate the family, on the theory that if the grandfather was a counter-revolutionary, the father and the grandsons would be opposed to the regime as well.
David Hawke is a human rights investigator who's interviewed dozens of former prisoners and guards from the six political prison camps operating in North Korea today.
The largest number of people in the prison camps are those who are the children or grandchildren of people considered to be wrongdoers or wrong thinkers.
I've never heard of anything like that.
It's unique in the 20th or 21st century. Mao didn't do it. Stalin didn't do it. Hitler, of course, tried to exterminate entire families. But in the post-World War II world, it's only Korea that had this practice.
North Korea denies it has any political prisons, but refuses to allow outside observers to inspect Camp 14 and other sites.
There's no way to verify all the details of Shin's story. Do you believe his story?
Oh, sure. His story is consistent with the testimony of other prisoners in every respect.
There's also physical evidence he carries around with him to this day. The tip of his finger is missing. He says it was chopped off as punishment when he accidentally broke a machine in a prison factory. He also has serious scars on his back, stomach, and ankles, which he was willing to show us, but embarrassed to show on camera. He says he received those wounds here in an underground torture center. He was tortured because his mother and older brother were accused of trying to escape. He was just 13 years old at the time.
Did they think that you were involved in the escape?
I'm sure they did.
How did they torture you?
They hung me by the ankles. And they tortured me with fire. And from the scars that I have, the wounds on my body, I think they couldn't have done more to me.
Shin says he tried to convince his interrogators he wasn't part of the escape plot. He didn't know if they believed him until one day when they took him to that field used for executions.
When I went to the public execution site, I thought that I might be killed. I was brought to the very front. That's where I saw my mother and my brother being dragged out. And that's when I knew that it wasn't me.
How did they kill your mother?
They hung her. And they shot my brother.
He speaks of it still without visible emotion and admits he felt no sadness watching his mother and brother die. He thought they got what they deserved. They had, after all, broken the prison rules.
He believed the rules of the camp like gospel.
Blaine Hardin is a veteran foreign correspondent who first reported Shin's story in the Washington Post and later wrote a book about his life.
He had no compass by which to judge his behavior.
He had a compass, but the compass were the rules of the camp, the only compass he had. And it was only when he was 23, when he met somebody from the outside, that started to change.
When he met Park?
When he met Park.
Park was a new prisoner Shin says he met while working in Camp 14's textile factory. Unlike Shin, Park had seen the outside world. He'd lived in Pyongyang and traveled in China, and he began to tell Shin what life was like on the other side of the fence.
I paid most attention to what kind of food he ate outside the camp.
What kind of food had he eaten?
Oh, a lot of different things. Broiled chicken, barbecue pig. The most important thing was the thought that even a prisoner like me could eat chicken and pork if I were able to escape the barbed wires.
I've heard people define freedom in many ways. I've never heard someone define it as broiled chicken.
I still think of freedom in that way.
Really? That's what freedom means to you?
People can eat what they want. It could be the greatest gift from God.
You were ready to die just to get a good meal?
Yes. He got his chance in January 2005, when he says he and Park were gathering firewood in this remote area near the electrified fence. As the sun began to set, they decided to make a run for it.
And as they ran towards the fence, Shin slipped in the snow with a snowy ridge, fell on his face. Park got to the fence first and thrust his body between the first and second strand and pulled down that bottom wire and was immediately electrocuted.
How did you get past him?
I just crawled over his back.
So you climbed, you literally climbed over him?
Yeah.
He was a fugitive now in rural North Korea, on the run in one of the poorest, most repressive countries in the world. But that's not how it seemed to him.
What did the outside world look like?
It was like heaven. People were laughing and talking as they wanted. They were wearing what they wanted. It was very shocking.
How did you manage to get out of North Korea?
I was just trying to get away from the camp, and I ended up going north. And on the northern side, people talked a lot about China.
Did you know where China was?
No, not at all. It just happened that the way I was going was toward the border. With amazing luck and cunning, Shin managed to steal and bribe his way across the border and quietly work his way through China, where he would have been sent back if he was caught. In Shanghai, he snuck into the South Korean consulate and was granted asylum. In 2006, he arrived in South Korea with not a friend in the world. He was so overwhelmed by culture shock and post-traumatic stress, he had to be hospitalized. More than 7 years later, it's remarkable how far Shin's come. He's 30 now, has made friends, and built a new life for himself in Seoul, South Korea. But old demons from Camp 14 are never far behind. And Shin now admits there was something he was hiding. 2 years ago, he finally confessed to author Blaine Harden.
When he first told me about the execution of his mother and brother, he didn't say that he had turned them in.
You reported your mother and your brother?
Yes.
What did you hope to get out of reporting your mother and your brother?
Being full for the first time.
More food?
Yes. But the biggest reason was I was supposed to report it.
Why was Shin tortured after ratting out his mother and brother?
The guard who he ratted out to did not tell his superiors that he got the information from Shin.
So the guard basically was trying to claim credit?
Yes.
It was only after seeing what family life was like outside Camp 14 that Shin says he started to feel guilt about what he'd done to his own mother and brother. My mother and brother, if I could meet them through a time machine, I would like to go back and apologize. By telling this story, I think I can compensate, kind of repent for what I did.
Repentance has taken Shin all over the world. He speaks at human rights rallies, meets with U.S. congressmen, and is telling his story to us in part because he's frustrated by how much attention the press pays to North Korea's new leader, Kim Jong-un, and his wife, and how little attention gets paid to the people in the camps. In South Korea, he and some friends started an internet talk show designed to tell the world what's really going on in the North. As for that taste of freedom he risked his life for, he can eat all the broiled chicken he wants now, but admits it hasn't given him the satisfaction he'd hoped for.
When I eat something good, when I laugh with my friends, or, you know, when I make some money, I'm excited. But that's only momentary. And right afterwards, I start worrying again.
You worry about what now?
What I worry about now is all those people in the prison camps. Children are still being born there, and somebody is probably being executed.
And you think about, do you think about that a lot?
Go to 60MinutesOvertime.com to meet the American couple who have informally adopted Shin.
You're now in Bill Benica's world, where talk is cheap.
That's an amazing story, and I hope you I indulge me in sharing that with you, because it was just a remarkable, amazing thing, and I wanted to share that with you. So, you're Bill Bankett, talking Sheep, Friends, and Neighbors Network on 1340 KYNS, your news station, and right now it's 12:51, and we're stroking along here on a Monday. We're getting the Monday thing going, and as much as you can get a Monday thing going, you know, I know it's difficult. I know it's difficult. We had to meet some people yesterday in the South County, and then we were going to drive from there elsewhere. And I get in the car, and it's dead as a door knocker. And we're so late that, and we were supposed to drive all four of us somewhere. It was so late, it got to be so late that I said, Nancy, let's just get in the car, get the other car. We have a two-seater, a little Miata that's 25 years old. So let's get in that thing, and we'll just have them do the driving, which we finally did, and it all worked out okay. But no, I don't know what happened. These things happen. Who understands, though? Mechanics, electronics. It's tough. It's really tough. This is an interesting thing. They're talking about global emissions hitting a new record. We're down 2%. We're the second highest polluter, but we're down from what we used to be. Then they had a story again in the paper, and I don't know which paper it was this weekend, but they were talking about how in third world countries they use kerosene lamps and how much pollution that adds to the environment, which is quite remarkable how much it is. But I think I told you once before, I remember reading a number, and I don't have the faintest idea what it was, but it was in the millions of cubic feet of stuff that is generated by people just starting barbecues in Southern California. So anyway, it's just remarkable. But so here's the thing: this being poor really sucks, because all you can do is have a kerosene lantern. You don't have electricity. All you can afford is a kerosene lantern, and now you're told that that's no good. I don't know what to say. That's pretty bad. All right. Scouts resisted doing background checks, they say, back in the 80s when other groups went extra miles to check leaders during the 80s organization, a robbed by sex abuse scandal opposed the practice. And I wasn't sure why after I read this. Big Brothers Big Sisters ordered the checks for all volunteers starting in 1986. And that's not really true. They started long before then, because I was with Big Brothers back in 1970. I don't know if I don't remember. 71, 72, way back then. And we did background checks. Oh. They said it was kind of a false sense of security, that they figured, well, you know, the guy's a good enough guy to be a Boy Scout leader. He must be a good guy. Not necessarily. Here's the headline here. Where are California's Latino stars? Despite demographic numbers, parties have found a few to be legislative leaders. They do have a picture of Abel Maldonado. I'm not sure how to take that, but okay. And they mentioned a few people, you know, Bustamante and some others, but to Arturo Vargas, executive director of the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, the absence of a homegrown Latino leader mentioned alongside Rubio and the Castro brothers is non-coincidental. Despite the state's reputation for diversity, California has elected only a single Hispanic to statewide office in the modern era, Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante. So then, of course, Abel Maldonado held the position, but he was appointed. So very interesting. I don't have an answer to that. Maybe they just haven't found their voice yet to say, okay, well, this is how we're going to do it. I would think that's it, to tell you the truth, because you can't have as many Hispanics as we have in California and not have that happen eventually. It just hasn't happened as of the 3rd of December. Give it time. Got a lot of rich, pasty white guys in the way. Yeah. Other people in the news. Now, here's an interesting story. Veterans urge gun law change. A group of senior retired generals and admirals are calling for Congress to amend a recent law that they say dangerously interferes with the ability of commanders to battle with epidemics of suicides among members of the military. Legislation added to the 2011 Defense Authorization Bill, the urging of gun rights advocates, prohibits commanders from collecting any information about weapons privately owned by troops. Critics say the law prevents commanders from being able to talk to service members about their privately owned weapons, even in cases where the command officer thinks the service member is at risk for suicide. So they're just not allowed to talk about it? That doesn't make sense to me. If you let's say the person is then recommended to psychiatric counseling or some kind of counseling, it would seem then that in that environment that they would have a right to ask. But I could be wrong. Here, this terrible thing happened in Japan. First off, can I tell you? I mean, you know me. I don't like flying. I don't like going underwater. I don't like going in tunnels. I gotta have speed. I gotta feel like I can move. So anyway, there's a 3-mile-long tunnel in Japan, and the roof caved in about a mile into it and crushed a bunch of cars, and it killed 9 people and started a fire in 2 of the cars. Well, so now the huge tunnel's full of smoke. They're trying to get responders in there. What a mess. And this was, concrete ceiling slabs that fell down. So, okay. I don't want to think about that too long. And then we had a Vietnam War-era mortar that killed 4 kids. This is weird. They recovered this mortar. They say right now, this is an amazing number right here. The shell exploded when the children were found. The shell and a bamboo brush were playing with it. A villager found the shell 5 years ago when dredging a canal. But all he did was stick it in the bamboo. Well, the kids got in the bamboo, and they played with the thing and killed themselves. So Vietnamese government figures show unexploded ordnance have killed more than 42,000 people since the war ended in 1975. We got more people after we left than we were there. Anyway, pretty amazing. Just pretty amazing. Okay. And then I have to tell you, I'm glad I'm not involved in this when I was young. Please. Pilot program adds classroom time to try to boost learning. So here you have a Colorado, Connecticut, New York, Tennessee. They're going to add 300 hours more of school. Now, they haven't decided how they're going to do it. Are they going to add more days? Are they going to add more hours of the day? Whatever. So now they're saying it's the only way now, the way the school system is run, to get things like extra math help, extra science help, which they feel is the most important things in the whole world, but also that they can get extracurricular stuff. They'll be able to be exposed to music and some of this other stuff that they're not now because it's all been taken away. But anyway, 300 more hours of school, that's a lot of hours. I know I've shared the story. For one teacher once, I spent 200 hours after school at half-hour intervals to give you an idea of what an idiot I was. Yeah, you just couldn't shut your mouth, could you, Becca? I had something to say. Oh, and here's, guess what? We should have said this right here. We got Prince William and Catherine, Duchess of Cambridge, are expecting a child. I don't know how that happened, but they're expecting one. And she had to be hospitalized because she has really bad morning sickness. There's a name for it. They said it on TV this morning. There's a name for it. There's a scientific name for it where you dehydrate because you really just can't keep anything down. And so they were worried about her dehydrating because she's kind of skinny anyway. And so they have her in the hospital and they're just taking care of her and making sure she's okay. But anyway, so this was a glorious news to those in England and perhaps across the pond right here in the United States. It's glorious also.
It's Christmas time again this year. I can't believe it's already here. Ain't bought a single thing, oh dear. I'm so far behind. I like to get my shopping done before the line's getting long in all the stores. I'll spend more than we can afford. But hey, it's Christmas time. It's Christmas time again, you see. Let's go pick out the perfect tree. Is it leaning left or is it just me? Oh, hon, it looks just fine. We'll hang the tinsel, string the lights. These ornaments will take all night. It's a lot of work, but that's all right. It's Christmas time. We'll eat too much and swear again that come New Year we're getting in the best shape that we've ever been. But we know we're lying, so pass the pie in one more roll and pass me that remote control. Oh, looky here, I love this show. It's Christmas time. It's Christmas time, who's at the door? Well, sure, there's room for seven more. We'll make some pallets on the floor. That'll be just fine. The turkey's done, pull up a chair. Grab a hand, let's say a prayer for all those soldiers over there. You know it's Christmas time. Fly right by, then we'll wake up in an hour or two. To mommy, look, this one's for you. Oh, I love it, hon, I really do. It's Christmas time. It's Christmas time again, you know. It hit me just an hour ago. It ain't about the mistletoe. Let's keep that in mind. It's about the star that led the way, the baby child born that day. It's 'cause of him we all say it's Christmas time.
Beneath the language of our tax rates and tax breaks and tax loopholes in Washington right now, and you find this question: should the wealthy pay more in taxes than other people? It's a debate that goes all the way back to the Bible.
If you read these ancient sources, you realize there's nothing new under the sun.
I'm CNN's Libby Lewis. Jeffrey Miller's one person who's looked at what the Bible says about taxation. He teaches law at New York University.
One of the things you find when you read the Bible is that there's a big debate about progressivity. Should the wealthy be paid more than poor people? Should everybody be paid the same?
There was the temple tax, the one God told Moses to impose in Exodus 30. It's the one where each person, rich and poor, pays half a shekel for the temple and for God. I ask Miller, why the same amount?
The Bible says that's because you're redeeming your soul and everybody's soul is worth the same amount.
That idea of equality in the temple tax and in some other biblical tithes has been a touchstone for some conservatives in the tax debates. That's according to Adam Chatterow, a tax professor who's written a lot about the Bible and taxation. He remembers a referendum in Alabama a few years ago to change the state's tax system so that the wealthy paid more. And he says that effort triggered religious arguments from both sides.
One critic of the reform said, and I'm quoting here, "God imposes a flat income tax or tithe, so it must be fair. If people do not pay the same tax rate, then obviously the rates must be arbitrary and capricious."
Other taxes in the Bible did impose heavier burdens on the wealthy. Chatterell says there are some great stories in the Bible and the Talmud that reveal how people thought about how to approach taxation.
There are other examples in the Bible and in the Talmud. One of my favorites is that there's a city that's in need of a wall, and they have to build this wall, and the question is, who's going to contribute and how much? And so the discussion goes something like this. Well, it depends on why we're building the wall. If we're building the wall because we're afraid of our lives, then everybody benefits the same, everybody contributes the same. But if we're worried about them stealing stuff and just leaving us alive, well, then the rich people should pay more because they have more that's being protected. And we should also charge those who live near the wall more than those who live in the city center because they're the ones who actually get the most protection out of the wall.
Chatterose says, when people look to the Bible for guidance on tax policy, they're really looking for values.
Implicit in the argument that the Bible should guide us is the notion that when God spoke to Moses, he had some conception of fairness, because that's what we're trying to do in our tax system. We're trying to allocate the tax burden fairly.
But Chatterose says the Bible's not very good at answering the question, what's fair in taxation? Old Testament scholar Walter Brueggemann says it's a mistake to focus narrowly on tax systems in the Bible to answer what is fair and right. He says the answer permeates the text.
I think that the whole tradition in the Old Testament that runs from the covenant at Mount Sinai through the book of Deuteronomy and on into the prophetic tradition are all arguing about the solidarity of the community and the way in which the rich and the poor and the haves and the have-nots are bound into a common destiny. And obviously the text does not much use a notion of taxes, but it does talk all the time about contributing to the common good.
Brueggemann says he thinks the idea that underlies the Old Testament of a common good is completely absent from today's debate over taxes.
I don't think we're able to frame the question around the common good or around the neighborhood. So I think we engage in these rather insidious debates about raising taxes or lowering taxes. And I just think that's the wrong topic to be debating.
Instead, Brueggemann says, we should be talking about how to maintain the whole community, not just our private interests, and what will happen if we don't. For that, he said, he looks to the prophets of the Old Testament, mainly Amos, Isaiah, Micah, Hosea, and Jeremiah. They warned of disaster to a community whose members take care of themselves alone.
They try to penetrate the illusion of a society that is well off when, in fact, it is disintegrating from within precisely because people with resources are not contributing to the common good.
And Brueggemann believes that is the society we are living in now.
I think it's destructive for our future in exactly the way these old prophets talked about.
Libby Lewis, CNN.
Well, there you go. Bible 101. We have at 15 after the hour of 1 o'clock, you're Bill Becker, Talk of Sheep, Friends and Neighbors Network on 1340 KYMS, your news station. And so now we're going to have Sleep 101 because I'm going to tell you about Eidler Sleep Center. That's at 189 Cross Street where Cross and Short come together. And right there in the corner, right there in the corner. They're right next to Habitat for Humanity's offices, and then right across the street from there's a used furniture place, and then there's the pharmacy, and there's a... All right, so you got where it is. Okay, so go in there, and then you're going to either run to Cody, you're going to run to Juniper, and you're going to say, we need to check out some breads here. Spreads. Sheets and pillowcases. Help. 20-year limited warranty on Tempur-Pedic. So you once for the Tempur-Pedic because they got all the great kinds. They got the Contour, they got the Breeze, they got the Weightless, they got all these different kinds of Tempur-Pedics that are just fab. And then they have the top of the line model, I forget what it's called, Yowzer. And they have different thicknesses and firmnesses and all that. And then also they carry Sealy Optimum, which is kind of the same idea. It's kind of a foam type of a bed. Beauty Rest, Posturepedic. They have all these beds and you can try them out right there at the sleep place. It's nice and quiet. Just go in there and sack out for a little bit and see what you like. They have the Tempur-Pedic, been recommended by Consumer's Digest, by Arthritis Foundation, by Good Housekeeping. I mean, all these people are piling on saying this is the thing to do. And the place to go is Eidler since 1954, for gosh sakes. So I go to Eidler's and go to the sleep shop and see if I can find some place to lay my head in the future, like tonight. And they take away your old stuff. They do the new. They deliver. They set up. They do the whole thing. You don't have to worry about anything. All you have to do is sleep. So that's pretty cool. All right. What else is happening here, Billy? What the heck else is going on in the world? Okay. Well, we have tensions are rising. We have you have in the West Bank, you have the Israel say we're going to build more houses just to try to divide Palestine in half. Anything that could be called a Palestine someday. So that's going to be bad. And then you have Iran has now said if, in fact, they are attacked by Israel because Israel wants to destroy their nuclear capability, if they're attacked by Israel, they'll assume that we're behind it also, even if we say we're not. They don't care what we say. So then it's open season on American bases overseas. They feel that they can then attack them. That's fair game. And then you have Syria, which really is spooky because it, you know, they're saying that they might be putting together chemical weapons. I had another story about the fact that one of the groups that the Syrian rebels have linked up with a group that's possibly linked to Al-Qaeda, and they're really helping them out a lot. You know, so it's not like, well, we can do without those guys. So far, that's not the case. So anyway, it's the whole Middle East, as you can tell, is like, not good. Not good. Not good. Okay. Palestinian president returned triumphantly to the West Bank, they said, because everybody was happy about it. And they thought he did a good job by getting involved with the, UN. The UN thing was a success. So that's why it is right there. Okay. President Mahmoud Abbas. Got to get these names down because we're going to be hearing a lot about them. Okay. We got the fiscal cliff thing, and we're not doing anything that's worthwhile about that. So the opinion of the Tribune today was, actually the Sacramento Bee and the Tribune, spending cuts and tax hikes both needed. Spending cuts and tax hikes both needed. And forget this Grover Norquist. Forget this guy. You know, I would think so, but that's just me. Okay. Jim is a friend of mine in the Tascadero. He wrote a letter to the editor today. And once again, he uses a term that I scratch my head when it comes to the circumstance. I scratch my head because I didn't know when I elected a public political figure that part of this was in the offing of what they promised me. So this, of course, has to do with Supervisor Bruce Gibson and his aide, and you know it was bad. But here the statement's used again. These people violated our trust. If they will violate our trust on something as sacred as marriage, can we trust them on anything else? When I vote for somebody, and this is just maybe I'm dumb. I mean, I'll admit it. You know, maybe I'm ignorant. But when I vote for somebody, their marriage isn't part of what I'm voting for. I'm going to tell you honestly, it's not. It's not. I wouldn't vote for Barack Obama because of Michelle Obama. I wouldn't have voted for Romney because of his wife. I just don't. That has nothing to do with it to me. What are they? I mean, I realize they have the president's ear and all that kind of stuff. You know. You don't want to have strange ears in there. But I just don't get it. I'm sorry. I still don't get it. Now, I do get the part now where because she worked for him and was employed by him as an at-will employee, that she could actually sue the county, you know, for canoodling, which would be kind of unfair. She seemed to be having a good time, too. So doesn't seem right. Okay. Other things going on. So then there was somebody, we had a bah humbugger here, Jim, another Jim from Atascadero, said, why should tax money be used in streets used and public streets and all that to celebrate a Christmas parade? Yeah. So by changing the name from Christmas parade to a holiday parade, then somehow that solves the whole problem. You know, The things that surround that holiday parade are very Christmassy, is the only thing. You gotta have that. Yeah. Yeah. Stockings, trees, that sort of stuff. Packages. Yeah, it's gonna seem very much like a Christmas parade, even though you might want to call it a holiday parade. I think you're kidding yourself. Here was a kind of a neat story. Maureen wrote this from Paso Robles, but it talked about her when she was young. and growing up and all that. So so he says, and it is the generosity of many that allows us to be of service this in the community to help other people. Like Salvation Army donate some money so we can buy vouchers for the Christmas baskets that they're doing at Tasker Loaves and Fishes. So anyway, so they talk about all those good things. We have to buy canned goods from the Food Bank Coalition of Slo County, so it would be much appreciated if you could support us as much as possible. Last year, 403 food baskets were distributed just as at the Armory, and we also served people Monday through Friday all year round. As I was a child, I remember my mother being upset with my father, which was unusual in our household. My father had given his Sunday shoes to a homeless man, and my father's only other shoes were his work boots. The lesson I learned from my father was not to wait until you have plenty of to help another, but to share whatever you may have with the one in need. How about that? How about them apples? How about them apples there? I liked it. I thought I'd share that with you. I thought I'd tell you about that. So that was good. That was good. Let me see if there's another thing I want to tell you about. No. All right, here's but here's some other exciting news. Where's my living, Central Coast Living? Say, Bill, what'd you find in Central Coast Living you thought was interesting? I'll tell you this right now. This sounds like a zip and a pip. A zip line is zing through downtown Las Vegas. And this is they have a temporary one up now, but it's gone so well, it's short, it's 800 feet. This thing's going to go from an 11-story slot machine and zing down a five-block zip line past one of the city's oldest casinos. It's called Slotzilla. Okay? It's going to cost $20 to $30 to ride. It's going to be ready. They're going to start working on it in January. But anyway, why not? You know, it's Vegas. Do any whatever you want to do. Do whatever you're going to do. Give it the go. Give it the go. There was one other thing in here that I saw besides it, but I don't know what it was. Let me see real quick. Bill, what was the other thing you were going to tell people? Oh, darn you. Darn. They have Latkes, Latkes, which I didn't care about. Oh, here was what it is, if I have this right, if I'm in the right place. Yeah, right here. Here's the guy that writes about the travel stuff. This is Arthur Frommer, who writes about traveling. He said there's an outfit called Oyster.com, and I didn't get a chance to do it today, but you go to Oyster.com, and it really exposes the phoniness of some hotel advertising. It really does. So it says, they'll show like a picture of a pool that's really neat, like a rooftop pool. But then this outfit, Oyster, will go and show you the building that's right next door that ruins the whole thing because it's, you know, 10 times higher and all this. So they basically what they try to do is expose people to the fakery of travel. And then they have some good recommendations and all that kind of stuff where you get good things. So he said, I think you'll find Oyster.com to be both enjoyable and useful. Both things, right there. Useful and enjoyable. Both things. All right. Real estate people sometimes do that, too. They want to make it look as good as they can. They may not even use the right unit in the picture. Trust me. All right, here's what happened with Ann Calhoun today on her Calhoun's cans. Boy, she was just in a mood. All right. Once again, the wringing of hands, the brow wrinkling concern, the dire prognosticators decrying stores that opened their doors on Thanksgiving night. Outrageous thunders, the church of TV pundity gas bags. We're destroying our American values. We're being overtaken by soul-eating commercialism. Halloween's barely over. The candy corn is still stuck in our teeth, and here comes the Christmas decorations and big sale doorbusters. There's nothing sacred anymore. But we Americans do love our fake nostalgia. In all of our heads, we carry the dream of the great American tradition, the perfect Thanksgiving, straight up Hollywood and a Norman Rockwell magazine cover, family gathered around the huge white linen-covered table, Granny bringing in the perfect turkey, warm sun is pouring in the dining room through the lace curtains, Uncle Fred and Aunt Sarah and Mom and Dad are there, little Timmy and Tammy are all brushed up, their unruly cowlicks laying flat, nice and clean in their Sunday's best, and are gathered around, eyes on the turkey, tummies rumbling with anticipation. Soon the feast will begin, the soft voices of a family sharing stories and decorous laughter rising above the clink of the Civil War on China. And when all are replete, the family will retire to the parlor to spend the rest of the lazy autumn day chatting or playing board games while the men folk doze in their big armchairs and women folk share gossip and do the washing up. Later, the kids will go out to play some touch football on the lawn, and towards evening, everyone will take a few moments to think about what a great country they live in and how important it is to spend the family time together and how much they'll have to be thankful for. Yeah, right. In the real world, the busy family stopped eating together years ago. It's food on the fly for ages, and if you were forced to sit at a table together for more than 10 minutes, then everyone would consider that to be a cruel torture. At one point, even Granny stopped cooking on the holidays years ago. I did Thanksgiving for 30 years. I'm not doing it anymore, she said. The family's gone vegan now, and that's tofurkey on the table. That's right, Bill, that's tofurkey on the table. Uncle Fred's fallen off the wagon and is now face down the mashed potatoes. Aunt Sarah's hissing at him, I could have married a doctor years ago, but knew I had to go marry you. Timmy and Tammy are suddenly slouched down in their chairs, their noses buried in their iPhones and furiously texting their friends, wishing to God they were somewhere else, anywhere else than here. While Dad has escaped the living room with his buddies, and they're parked in front of the big screen TV watching football and drinking beer. In short, dinner's over in a flash, and the family is bored, silly, and desperate to get away from each other as far as possible and as fast. And what better way to do that than head to the mall? It's the perfect combination. The atomized family, adrift from old-fashioned tradition and rigid social restraints, desperate for constant stimulation and entertainment, all gleefully swimming in the vast American sea of mass consumption. So starting the new tradition of a mall Thanksgiving Christmas seems like a winner. No need to spend boring time with one another. There's plenty of excitement and novelty for everyone. Tones of instant gratification provided by credit cards. And if anyone misses the thrill of violence formerly provided by football games, consider the recent Walmart Best Buy riots. The wonderful real-time thrill of dangerous crowds, headbutts, elbow slams, and even gunshots for armed shoppers. So I say to these gas bags, the criers of the death of tradition, zip it. Americans are always reinventing their traditions. It's what we do. Norman Rockwell's dead. Get over it. Time for a new holiday, the Great Winter Buy-a-thon. That's when on Thanksgiving and Christmas Day, Americans of all ages will gather together, credit cards securely tucked in their pockets right next to their Glocks and their smartphones, a backpack full of turkey sandwiches slung over their shoulders, oh, pioneers, and head with their fellow Americans to the malls of America for one of two glorious days of shopping and shooting each other and togetherness, a spectacular blow-up of a happily harvesting vast quantities of unnecessary crap that'll end up in the landfill come January 1st. Can you think of anything more American than this?
I'm a good gift giver. No, a fantastic gift giver. What do I get in return? An unnecessary cheek pinch. I deserve more. So this year, I'm giving Buffalo Wild Wings gift cards. For every $25 I spend, I can get a blazing bonus worth up to $100. So the next time I hear, oh, that's so sweet, it better be referring to honey barbecue sauce. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings. Beer. Sports. No purchase necessary. Must be 18 or older. Valid in restaurant at participating locations only. In void in Florida, New York, Rhode Island, and where prohibited by law. Until 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on December 31st, 2012. See official rules at BuffaloWildWings.com for restrictions and details.
The Shields family is a real California family, providing real hope for others.
Our dream of owning a home became a reality in 2005.
But recently, our adjustable rate mortgage became a financial nightmare.
We didn't know what to do. We came close to doing nothing.
Thankfully, I picked up the phone.
John called the Hope Hotline.
They helped us work with our lender, and we got to keep our home.
If the interest rate on your home has gone up and you can't afford the payments, act now. There are state and federal programs to help keep Californians in their homes. You might qualify for help, but you'll never know if you don't call.
If it worked for our family, it might work for yours.
To see if you qualify, call 888-995-HOPE, 888-995-HOPE, or visit yourhome.ca.gov to learn more. This message is brought to you by the State of California, aired by the California Broadcasters.
Gathering warm
CNN.
Radio.
Don't you hate it when a friend tells an embarrassing story about you and they promise never to tell it? Well, if the internet could talk, it would probably make a fool out of you. Maybe a story about
weird humming sound coming from feet.
What? That's John Herman.
I'm the deputy tech editor at BuzzFeed.
And I'm Jonathan Binder. We'll get to that foot condition in a minute. But for BuzzFeed, Herman wrote about the difference between creating a social profile online and the internet creating its own profile on us, collecting our deepest secrets. For those of us on social networks, we freely hand over a lot of personal information.
Male or female, email, password, confirm password.
Remember when you first joined Facebook and started that brand new profile?
Work history, religion, political views, relationship status.
Regardless of your privacy settings, Facebook's got a record of it.
I can scroll through Facebook down my timeline, and it'll take me back, you know, through recent jobs or relationships or all the way back to college. And it's unsettling, but it's my choice. So any unease you have about it, it really kind of comes down to you.
So with Facebook, for the most part, you control your information.
What Google then absorbs is all the rest, the things that you wouldn't share with anyone.
Herman's talking about your search history, not just from Google, but from any search site, including Yahoo and Bing. The secrets come from what you're doing on the internet. Your every move on these sites is captured and stored. But the looming question is, who can see it?
The U.S. government's requests have gone up significantly over the past about year and a half.
That's Heather Kelly. She's a
technology writer and producer for CNN.com.
She helped walk me through Google's transparency report put out by Google, which shows how many times governments around the world have requested specific user information. The U.S. is number one by a few thousand.
The transparency report is released every 6 months, and it looks like, you know, every 6 months the U.S. government has requested 1,000 additional pieces of user information from Google.
During the first 6 months of this year, the U.S. government and law enforcement made about 8,000 requests. Google complied with 90% of the cases and gave out information on 16,000 individual accounts, which can include anything from browser history to Gmail information. Not that all of our browsing history is useful to the government, but the idea of it being accessible is troubling to Herman.
I saw a link on Bing, Microsoft search engine, that allowed you to see your search history. And I looked, and the search history was, like, absolutely absurd. I can actually pull it up here.
It started out pretty normal, a search for a quote, info on Nathaniel Hawthorne, a general search for movies.
And then the first one in January was, and I quote, exactly, weird humming sound coming from feet. And I can't imagine why I searched for that. I can't imagine. I don't remember my feet humming or anything like that. Or
and you realize this is all on the record, too, so this may end up.
Yeah, that's my my humming feet problem is I'm not ashamed of it.
So Herman doesn't care that this odd foot condition could be known to the government. But internet searches through these various sites could reveal deep secrets. Herman points to a 2006 leak of AOL's search log of more than 600,000 users. No names were associated with the searches, only numbers. Part of the log revealed some very personal information. A few searches read, "How to make your husband fall back in love with you. Married, but in love with another man. I thought I could handle an affair, but couldn't."
The most powerful ones by far were the ones that clearly indicated that someone had committed a crime.
Some of those included whether or not a particular person was found dead or not, what's considered a burglary, and how to rob a specific location.
They always kind of haunted me. Those are peeks into the buried depths of people's souls, and they are indeed available for the government to subpoena should they need to.
That's one reason Google, along with a host of other tech companies,
Apple, AOL, Amazon, Microsoft, their carriers, AT&T, social media companies like Twitter and
founded
Facebook,
the Digital Due Process Coalition. They are pushing to update the law to at least require a search warrant before any government agency can get personal information. And that's kind of what the internet is all about, information, a continuing conversation of information. Because even though sometimes you're the only one talking, someone is listening and writing it down.
Because there, you are telling someone, you're telling a server somewhere, and that server is maintained by people, and that those people are employed by a company. But I think it's treated much more as like an unknowing sounding board, or sort of like an abyss of knowledge. It's not. Nothing online is.
Jonathan Binder, CNN.
There you go. your world is known to others. You're Bill Beck. I talk is cheap. Friends and Neighbors Network, 1340 KYN is your news station right now, 20 minutes before the hour, 2 o'clock. 1:40, as it were. And that was just, you know, you got to remind yourself of that, you know, there's people out there that they care about you. Not in a good way, though. No, not in a good way, but they care about you. All right. You know what hasn't happened yet? Well, Bill, lots of things haven't happened. Everything that's going to happen from tomorrow on hasn't happened yet. You know, from 2 o'clock on, from 1:41. But here's what I'm telling you about. The people from Missouri came forth and claimed their Powerball jackpot. Who's ever got the ticket from Arizona has not. So you're talking about after taxes and all that, it's about 7 million bucks, something like that. They're just not saying anything yet. Of course, it could kill you. And I mean, if you know you won that, you could die of a heart attack and be someplace weird where they couldn't find you. Yeah, I know. In a dumpster somewhere. All right, other things are going on today. Other things that are happening. Oh, here was the thing. Okay, here's the U.S. warns Syria about chemical weapons. Okay, as they're saying, don't do it, don't do it. Okay. According to a poll, Congress is the least honest. Yeah, that's good. Okay, that's really good. They said bolts are suspected in that tunnel collapse in Japan. Okay, we got a recall here for Trader Joe's. Now, here's what you got to watch out for right here. They've recalled 12.5-ounce boxes of Trader Joe's buttered chicken with basmati rice. Basmati rice with product code 2012-1031 and lot code 30512. I'll give you a chance to get a pencil in case you bought some of this stuff. If you've already eaten it, of course, you know, you're going to have problems with it. Okay. 12.5-ounce boxes of Trader Joe's buttered chicken with basmati rice with product code 2012-1031, which we assume was made on October 31st, right? And then a lot code of 30512. And they say it's got fears of listeria contamination in there. Here again, we have this thing again. You know, Trader Joe's has a very good reputation. I think most of the markets in town have a very good reputation, you know. And then all of a sudden they get bum food from somebody. And, it, you know, it's kind of sad, really. I mean, it's, you know, it's not their fault they got the bum food. They were sent the bum food. So it's kind of weird. Kind of weird. We had another thing. We had news in the news about people being fined, different agencies being fined for different things, you know, state agencies and whatnot. Other, you know, there's nothing more idiotic, and I mean completely idiotic, than fining one agency in the state by another agency of the state and or any government thereof. You're fining the taxpayers what you're doing, and the taxpayer didn't do it. Now, you know what happens in private industry? If that situation arises that would cost somebody, you know, multiple thousands of dollars in a fine, they'd be fired. They'd be fired. Somebody would, some head would roll, or heads, as the case may be. In the private sector, that's what we do. If somebody screws up that bad, they get fired. In the public sector, they get fined with taxpayer money. What's the problem with that? Okay, I thought I'd ask. Unbelievable. All right, business incentives are up to, add up to billions of dollars, by the way. Cities and states pay top dollars to woo firms, and there's no proof that it pays dividends. So, you know, they get these things where people are trying to get out-of-state companies to come into their state, and they, you know, give them all kinds of tax breaks and all kinds of incentives and all that stuff. But now what they said in this article was there's no real proof that it's actually done any good. It just doesn't. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be a lot of jobs or anything else. I remember years ago when I was in Spokane, and they wanted to build a who was it? Alcoa. I think it was Alcoa. Don't hold me to that, but I think it was Alcoa. They wanted to build not a smelting plant, but something like that. And they wanted to build it in this little town whose name I can't even remember. It was in the middle of nowhere. And so they assured the people. There's a number of things they assured the people. That you know, there would be local employment would go up, you know, they'd be hiring people, and the economy would change for the better, and everything would be happy and glorious. Well, a couple things happened. Number one, and they said it was not going to pollute at all; that you would never see pollution. If you went by this place at night, there was smoke billowing out of these stacks that they had there. I mean, stuff was billowing out of these stacks, but in the daytime, nothing. But at night, yeah. Then they brought in people from other parts of the country that wanted to live there and work there. So they didn't hire anybody locally. I mean, nobody. Not nobody. Not no how. And then, to make life even crazier, if let's say somebody from there wanted to get transferred to someplace else, the company would buy the house. But let me tell you what happened then. So the real estate people, there was only so many of them, you know, they'd basically, some of the real estate, not all of them, so now some of the real estate people, they would overinflate the value of the home so they'd get a bigger commission, you know. And then if somebody went to buy the home, the bank would say, we're not going to loan you that much money on that house, it's not worth it. So the house would sit there empty. This is all what happens can happen when somebody's trying to do you a favor by bringing in some big thing. Just to let you know, I've observed this moment. It's going to be bad. Okay. Now, here they have the front page of Sunday's paper. They had a new problem lurks offshore. They got the Panga boats and everything, and they got the one that was loaded with 3,000 pounds of pot, and the other one the other day, and then this terrible thing that happened to a Coast Guard chief petty officer down there in Santa Barbara Channel. Jeez. I think they're probably going to take a new approach to Panga boats as they approach boats in the middle of the night. You know what I mean? Shoot first, ask questions after. All right. PG&E still might pursue seismic permits. They're still thinking about doing it. It's a robust and thorough process, Gerald Strickland, PG&E's manager for nuclear projects, said. Meanwhile, biologists involved in two wildlife monitoring programs begun as part of the seismic survey say information they have gathered will increase scientific knowledge of sea otters and harbor porpoises. Here they had a thing the other day. I don't understand. You know, it depends on who's writing the letter, how it's said, you know, the article, how it's presented to you. And so, the bias that somebody wants you to have is automatically built into what it is they've written and how they've written it. You know, you've noticed that. So here's the deal. So Not long ago, in the last year, we were told that cat feces washing off of the, you know, yards and streets and all that was the cause for the demise of some sea otters. They had a specific thing that they said was a problem. Now, the other day they had an article that said, no, it's nitrates from the farms that's doing it. There's a huge difference between a cat poop and farm nitrates, isn't there? Or is there not? Maybe they make it out of cat poop. I don't know. How would I know? Anyhow, seems odd to me. Okay. Seems odd to me. Just telling you that. Okay. All right. Other people in the news. See, here was the story. Three fall in a stormy sea off the pier in Cayucas. And the guy said it's fairly common for people to fall off the pier. They just don't normally do it on a stormy winter night. I don't know what they're talking about. Now here, are people as incensed with this Kim Kardashian lady who I know nothing about, but are they as incensed with her because her marriage to this basketball guy, Humphreys, it hasn't been annulled or voided or anything yet. In theory, they're still married, but separated. Is that correct? Am I correct? Yeah. So it hasn't been dissolved. So she's already said she's going out and jumping around with, who is the guy now? I forget. I forget some guy. So anyway, that doesn't seem right. Did you put your trust in her? Would you? Could you? Should you? Okay, right there. Then, in the middle of this, you know, this end of the superstorm, this crazy, crazy thing going on, here's a guy who's got more money than goodness, but he's sharing his goodness because he's giving out, a Kansas City businessman is giving away $100,000 in $100 bills this season. He just goes around. Secret Santa started his day-long East Coast visit with stops in Elizabeth, New Jersey, keeping close watch over the cash handouts was a security entourage, police officer in uniform from New York and New Jersey, plus FBI agents and former agents from various states. Some have become supporters, wearing red caps marked with the word ELF and helping Santa choose locations where people are in most need. How cool is that? Cool as that. How would that make you feel if you had some dough? That'd make you feel pretty good, I think. All right, is there anything else we have? NASA says, but let's play this. NASA says the world is not ending, despite what you may have heard. The world is not ending. I'll get it for you here in a second. We'll probably have a little ad in the beginning. But the world is not ending this month. I know the Mayan calendar, all that. I know. You're wrong. Doomsday fears, you're wrong. Oh, so I have this dramatic music, which has nothing to do with the story, but it's kind of neat. Okay, because this is for, I forget. I don't remember. So this music probably doesn't work on me, the thing of the Valkyrie there, because I don't remember what it's for. So, I'll remember when I see it at the end. Oh, there it is. Oh, it's the Chromebook by Google. That's it. All right, $249 right there. That's what it is. Here we have the story.
The Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer. Weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on CNN.
Steve Pace has been prepping for the end of the world for years.
I foresee the potential for a disaster that's catastrophic.
CNN caught up with him in 2009 as he prepared with food, weapons, even anti-radiation pills, all for this year, 2012.
I'm talking the collapse of civilization.
Pace is among the doomsdayers worried that December 21st, 2012 will be the last. That's the day when the ancient Mayan calendar is said to end.
Their calendar does not end.
But that talk of the end of the world, sheer nonsense, says top scientists. In this YouTube video that NASA put out, experts explain why it's just another day. Their scientists take all of the rumors one by one and debunk them. Among the theories is that a large planet known as Nibiru will have a close encounter with Earth, wreaking all kinds of havoc.
So this enormous planet is supposed to be coming toward Earth, but if it were, we would have seen it long ago. And if it were invisible somehow, we would have seen the effects of this planet on the neighboring planets.
Thousands of astronomers, expert and novice, see nothing of the sort. Another theory is that the planets will somehow align, causing devastating tidal waves. Two problems there. There is no planetary alignment taking place, and even if it were, only the moon and sun could have an effect on tides on the Earth, says NASA. Experts have also dismissed other theories, like the shifting of the Earth's magnetic poles or solar storms. To some, it may all sound like fantasy, but there are quite a few people who are really afraid, mostly because for the past several years, the Internet has been abuzz with talk of the world ending on December 21, 2012. David Morrison, senior scientist at the NASA Astrobiology Institute, says he has been inundated with emails, including a message from two parents who said they were planning on killing their children and themselves ahead of the day.
I have received thousands of emails that were sent to NASA's website, Ask an Astrobiologist, asking about all aspects of this strange 2012 doomsday hoax, including many children who are really scared, who say they can't sleep, they can't eat. Some have even said they're contemplating suicide.
Morrison has put out a doomsday 2012 fact sheet. He says he's looking forward to December 22nd, the day after, so that the world can get on with their lives and children can look forward to something else, Christmas.
Mayan experts have also weighed in saying, look, the calendar doesn't end, that it's like ending our year on December 31st. Well, then we have a new year that starts the very next day, Joe.
Well, that really screwed things up. I really screwed things up for a fair deal. Well, I was going to play my thing and my thing, and then I accidentally clicked the wrong thing. I was supposed to get rid of CNN News and then play this other stuff, but I didn't do it right. Oh, you'll have that sometimes with the Talk is Cheap, the Friends and Neighbors Network. So there's not much you can do about it except just try to proceed as fast and as quickly as you can and try to make amends for it in any possible way that is possible. Anything you can do. Let's try this. Okay, there we go. We're going to start with this and go from there. Here we go. Ready? Come on. Here you go. Con, big dog. Here you go.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. And if you threw a party, you invited everyone you knew. You would see the biggest gift would be from me and the car.
Thanks for being a friend. Thank you. We're going to get together again tomorrow at noon. Until then, may all your trails be happy ones. And don't believe everything you hear here because...
This is Talk is Cheap.
The game is over.
The Friends and Neighbors Network.
Game over.
With Bill Benica.
Bye. Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.
Happy trails to you till we meet again.
Oh,
Christmas, darling. Let us share the joy of love tonight. Go to win tonight. May come and go, and we're still dancing slow. Can't you hear my song? The song I sing for you.